Welcome to the summer edition 2023 of the Sid Vale and East Devon Talking Magazine, being read at Dissenters Hall, Sidmouth, on Thursday the 6th of July 2023. I'm Amanda Kirby, the editor, and will read along with Gillian Crooks and Jill Medcalf, and our producer is Hilary Bryars. Should you have any problems with equipment, please contact Wendy Eagles on 07552 766 382. In part one of this magazine, Gillian begins with a feature on avocets at Seaton Wetlands, and then we include an article about St Swithin's Day from the Talking Newspapers Network. Amanda continues with some excellent garden news, and Jill brings a classic recipe to use when the summer glut of soft fruits arrives. Gillian has an interesting insight into the Reverend Donald Peyton Jones, followed by Amanda and a discussion around loneliness. Jill brings to the first half to a conclusion with the poem, I Love to See Summer.
Avocets breed for the first time in Devon. East Devon Seaton Wetlands witnessed a triumphant breeding success as avocet chicks hatched on Monday the 26th of June. This marked the first occurrence of a family of avocets in Devon since their extinction 176 years ago. In spring, two avocets were seen foraging in the brackish lagoon of Black Hole Marsh before a pair was seen mating on the lagoon in late May, settling down to brood eggs on an island by the beginning of June. The Seaton Wetlands team kept a very close watch on the nest site, and the adult birds both in person and remotely while the eggs were incubated. With so many factors which could adversely affect a nesting attempt, as important as this, all staff and volunteers at Seaton Wetlands were sworn to secrecy until the first avocet chick successfully hatched. Avocets are very conspicuous birds, with both males and females vividly marked with pied black and white plumage, long pale blue legs, and a thin upturned bill. They chose to nest on an island with little vegetation cover. Both birds maintained a high state of vigilance to see off would-be predators, of which there are many on the local nature reserve. With the female sitting tight on the eggs, the male would stand like a sentry on the northern tip of the island, explained East Devon's District Council's countryside manager, James Chubb. Anything smaller than a Canada goose was seen off. We've a lot of crows here too, and they weren't even tolerated in the air above the nest. Whilst the countryside team could keep alert for intentional or reckless human disturbance, it was all down to the birds to protect themselves from natural predators. We kept the water levels on the lagoon as high as possible during incubation to provide protection from animals such as foxes or stoats. Councillor Paul Arnott, East Devon District Council's leader, said, "The administration has been steadfast in its support for nature and its protection. We understand the importance of caring for wildlife and their natural homes, so we continue to invest in our treasured nature reserves around East Devon. We are absolutely delighted to see our efforts are paying off with the breeding of this iconic wetland species, and would like to thank all the staff and volunteers across East Devon who have made this possible. Black Hole Marsh was created in 2008 with support from the Environment Agency as part of East Devon's District Council's ambitious Seaton Wetlands complex of nature reserves and setting out the District Council's commitment to nature recovery at a very early stage." Councillor Geoffrey Lung, East Devon District Council's portfolio holder for Coast, Country and Environment, said, "Strategic plans to attract avocets have long been in place. During that time, winter records of these birds have been regular in most years. 15 years on, it is now a magical sight to witness them breeding. Because the lagoon was entirely man-made, it was designed to provide excellent bird-feeding opportunities while giving good views from the hides and vantage points too. The assortment of islands with differing vegetation all point towards the central island hide, accessed via a wooden causeway, surrounding you with birds when you are in this hide. Visitors are welcome to visit Seaton Wetlands to see for themselves the Avocet's progress. Some key facts. The record of the oldest Avocet, identified through bird ringing, was almost 25 years, but 6 is thought to be the normal. Breeding usually takes place in their second year, and birds will often return to the same location if they have been successful in their first attempt. Avocets feed on small shrimps or other invertebrates, which they glean from the surface of the water or mud on estuaries or tidal lagoons. They use a sweeping motion of their unusual upturned bill to forage, and in murking conditions rely on the sensitive touch of that bill for successfully feeding. Oyster catchers are another wader which breeds on the lagoon, and 2023 saw a record 5 pairs raise broods, up 60% on 2022. It is hoped that with its ongoing commitment to manage and maintain the reserve, Avocet breeding pairs will increase in the years ahead.
Ready?
TNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
This is St Swithin and His Day, written and read by Alastair Hutton. A look at the calendar of saints will find it packed with a great many names, a large number of which you may never have heard of, but a few are familiar, even if you couldn't explain precisely the significance of their day. Fairly high among those is St Swithin, and the odd legend that whatever the weather on St Swithin's day, it will continue like that for another 40 days and 40 nights. If you've forgotten, St Swithin's Day falls on the 15th of July every year, and the legend is summed up in the rhyme, St Swithin's Day, if it does rain, full 40 days it will remain. St Swithin's Day, if it be fair, for 40 days 'twill rain no more. Of course, the rhyme and the legend are hardly likely to be a reliable forecast, but the curious among you might wonder how the idea arose in the first place. St Swithin was an Anglo-Saxon bishop at Winchester Cathedral in the 9th century, but he didn't merit much mention in the records of the time. He was known for his charity, and that was enough for him to be made patron saint of Winchester Cathedral a century after his death in 862. He's only credited with one miracle, making the homemaking whole again, an old lady's eggs after they were broken by workmen engaged in building a church. As he lay on his deathbed, St Swithin asked to be buried outside the old minster in Winchester in a modest grave where his body would be trodden on and rained on. A legend grew up that St Swithin's bones had miraculous healing properties, and on the 15th of July 971 the monks of Winchester moved his remains to an elaborate shrine inside the cathedral where pilgrims could be more comfortable. But legend has it that St Swithin wasn't happy about his body being moved, and on the day of the removal, ferocious and violent rainstorms beat on the cathedral for 40 days and nights, which was interpreted as his displeasure at the move. The original memorial was destroyed in King Henry VIII's break with the Roman Catholic Church, but the legend was strong enough for a new memorial to St Swithin to be built inside Winchester Cathedral. Of course, the truth of it's all a bit vague. There's no record of 40 dry or 40 wet days following St Swithin's Day since records began in 1861. However, the weather in the UK often settles into a pattern around mid-July for the next 6 weeks or so. That's governed by the jet stream. If it lies north of the United Kingdom throughout the summer, continental high pressure is able to move in, bringing warm sunshine. But if it flows further south, Arctic air and Atlantic weather systems are likely to predominate, bringing us colder and wetter weather. Such superstitions about the weather are not confined to Winchester in France. People keep watch for rain on St. Gervais Day, July the 19th, and in Germany, July the 7th is Seven Sleepers Day, which refers to the weather patterns over the next 7 weeks. So, what will the weather be after St. Swithin's Day this year? Legendary?
TNF Soundings.
Garden good news. In 2018, East Devon District Council launched a green waste collection service for its residents as an addition to its award-winning recycling system. The service has proven to be so popular that over 18,500 households have so far signed up for the service, and together with the council have created a mini green waste circular economy in the district. The green waste collected from the curbside is taken for composting at Hill Barton in East Devon. At the composting site, the green material from gardens across the district is checked for any contaminants, shredded, and they're arranged on piles called windrows. There are no additives. They just let Mother Nature do the rest, with some gentle help by regularly turning the windrows. In 12 to 14 weeks, this natural process turns the green materials to a high-quality compost. After testing to ensure the end product meets regulatory standards, the compost is collected by local farmers for use as a natural soil conditioner on local fields. An impressive 6,400 tonnes were spread out on local fields in 2022. This means that our farmers have to use less soil-based fertilisers, which is great to help with climate change. This service is a great example of a local green enterprise which lots of East Devon residents can participate in. This is good for our environment and good for our economy. The service produces a valuable resource that is collected locally and then used to benefit local farms. A truly East Devon circular economy green enterprise. As an added bonus, 40,000 tonnes of our green waste compost was used to mulch beds in East Devon's public parks and open spaces last year. The service has saved thousands of trips to household recycling centres, produces a natural resource for agriculture, and has created a number of jobs in East Devon, a winner all round. If you would like to sign up to the Green Waste Collection Service, either call 01395 571 515 or use the website at www.eastdevon.gov.uk/green.
Summer pudding. You will need a mix of berries from the garden. If you are buying separate fruits, you could use 300 grams of strawberries, 250 grams of blackberries, 100 grams of red currants, 500 grams of raspberries. Or you could use 1.25 kilograms of mixed berries and currants of your choice. And this could be a ready-mixed bag of frozen fruit. You'll also need 175 grams of caster sugar, 7 slices of day-old white bread with the crusts removed. Method. Step 1. Bring out the juices. Wash fruit and gently dry on kitchen paper. Keep strawberries separate. Put sugar and 3 tablespoons of water into a large pan. Gently heat until the sugar dissolves. Stir a few times. Bring to the boil for 1 minute, then tip in the fruit, but not the strawberries. Cook for 3 minutes over a low heat, stirring 2 to 3 times. The fruit will be softened, mostly intact, and surrounded by dark red juice. Put a sieve over the bowl and tip in the fruit and juice. Step 2. Line the bowl with cling film and prepare the bread. Line the 1.25 litre basin with cling film, as this will help you to turn out the pudding.
overlap two pieces of cling film in the middle of the bowl, as it's easier than trying to get one sheet to stick to all of the curves. Let the edges overhang by about 15 centimetres. Cut the crusts off the bread. Cut four pieces of bread in half, a little on an angle, to give two lopsided rectangles per piece. Cut two slices into four triangles each and leave the final piece whole. Step 3. Build the pud. Dip the whole piece of bread into the juice for a few seconds to coat. Push this into the bottom of the basin. Now dip the wonky rectangular pieces one at a time and press around the basin's sides so that they fit together neatly, alternately placing wide and narrow ends up. If you can't quite fit the last piece of bread in, it doesn't matter. Just trim into a triangle, dip in juice, and slot in. Now spoon in the softened fruit, adding the strawberries here and there as you go. Step 4. Let flavours mingle, then serve. Dip the bread triangles in juice and place on top. Trim off overhang with scissors. Keep leftover juice for later. Bring cling film up and loosely seal. Put a side plate on top and weight down with cans. Chill for 6 hours or overnight. To serve, open out cling film, then put a serving plate upside down on top and flip over. Serve with leftover juice, any extra berries, and cream.
The Reverend Donald Peyton Jones, an unconventional vicar. In his past life, Peyton Jones, known as PJ, was trained to kill. Just one aspect of this Sidmouth resident's extraordinary life. He was born in Australia in 1914, but was educated in England from the age of 19. The Royal Navy was in his blood, both in distant relatives and close family members. At the age of 19, he was commissioned into the Royal Marines. He specialised in gunnery and served on HMS Coventry in World War II. The ship saw much action, but was sunk in 1942. He was awarded a DSC for gallantry at the time. After the war, he helped to co-found the Special Boat Service, the SBS, the Marine version of the SAS. PJ left the Marines in 1959 and trained for the ministry. He described meeting, in later life, one of the German pilots who had sunk Coventry. The pilot had asked PJ at what point he had decided to become a priest. "When you were bombing me," he had replied. His first post was in Withycombe Raleigh, Exmouth, before moving to Salcombe Regis for 10 years, from the mid-60s. His appearance was distinctive. Dark hair, black beard, green marine's berry, white cassock, and sandals. The white ensign commonly flew from the flagstaff on the Chirp Tower. PJ's preferred method of transport was by horse, and with his two dogs running alongside, he visited parishioners. Some complained of the hoof marks in their gardens, but he was well liked, and many were very fond of him. He would also meet people in the pubs. "A pub is a sort of confessional," he said. "People communicate freely after a few drinks. They tell you their personal problems." He supported the rights of travellers, hippies and down-and-outs, often sharing his house with them. There were complaints after open-air candlelit services, in which some of the gathering chose to smoke illegal substances. The famous event of Mary King was influenced by PJ. Mary's father, who was the verger at Salcombe Regis, and although she did not grow up in a horsey family, she became fascinated by PJ's horse, and eventually, aged 6, she persuaded her mother to leave her around the lanes on it. After that, she rode everything she could, even a donkey, and realised that she wanted to become a professional rider. PJ himself enjoyed riding into town and made a special effort to secure his horse to no waiting signs. He maintained his close Royal Naval ties by attending the annual Sidmouth RNOCA, Trafalgar Night Dinners. On one occasion, his horse, which had been tied to a seafront post, was released by an inebriated colleague. The horse made its own way back to Salcombe Regis, and PJ had to walk home. His next parish was the fishing village Appledore in North Devon, where he maintained his love of competitive sailing. He incorporated Lundy Island into his parish. The single telephone connection to the mainland often failed in bad weather, and PJ used carrier pigeons to tell his wife if he was delayed. The GPO warned him that he was infringing its monopoly. He retired to Corsan near Plymouth and became closely involved with Mission for Seamen. He died in 2004, aged 90. His wife Anne had died in 1984, and he was survived by four of their children. Although it is over 50 years since he worked in the Sid Valley, all who knew him have a story to tell.
Loneliness. How to stay connected. If you suffer from loneliness from time to time, ironically, you're not alone. Support is available. Most of us will experience loneliness at some time in our lives. According to the Lonely Society, a report published by the Mental Health Foundation. The report, based on data provided by over 2,000 people, found that 48% of those surveyed believed that Britain is becoming a lonelier place. The COVID-19 pandemic is partly to blame. After spending so long in survival mode, isolated from ones we love, many of us still find it increasingly hard to coax ourselves out of what was that more guarded and introverted mindset. This is made even more pronounced when we factor in the move from communal offices to remote working, which has changed the lives of millions of people across the UK. The ever-advancing progression of technology and social media is also believed to be a contributor. Despite claims that technology helps us to connect with people, many experts believe that having constant access to technology can actually prevent us from building personal relationships. Although many of us will be familiar with the upset of not being invited to a party or the devastation of losing a loved one, what many people don't know is that loneliness can also have a serious impact on our physical health. The work of neuroscientists such as John Cacioppo at the University of Chicago has shown that the stress of loneliness can directly affect our mental and physical well-being, with a cumulative effect of the heart that is the equivalent of a non-smoker taking up smoking. So, with this in mind, what's the best way to overcome loneliness? Look to your community groups or organisations that support your hobbies. You'll find communities coming together to run activity, from quizzes and discussion groups to group sports classes. The stigma of connecting with new people and interacting online is no more. Making friends online is very real. If you don't have access to the internet but are looking to talk to new people, Age UK offers a free telephone friendship service for people over 60 who are missing the joy of regular conversation. You can find someone, or even more than one person, to talk to each week. Or just use the service as and when you need it. Just tell them a bit about yourself and they'll do the rest to match you with someone who shares similar interests. Call 0800 6778 1602 or visit www.ageuk.org.uk.
I Love to See the Summer by John Clare. I love to see the summer beaming forth, and white woolsack clouds sailing to the north. I love to see the wildflowers come again, and mareblobs stain with gold the meadow drain, and water lilies whiten on the floods, where reed clumps rustle like a wind-shook wood, where from her hiding place the moorhen pushes and seeks her flag nest floating in bulrushes. I like the willow leaning halfway o'er the clear deep lake to stand upon its shore. I love the hay grass when the flower head swings to summer winds and insects' happy wings that sport about the meadow the bright day and see bright beetles in the clear lake play.
Devon InSight offers a range of holistic services for anyone affected by sight loss across Devon. They can provide support to people who are blind or partially sighted, their families, friends, and carers. They provide an impartial information, advice, and guidance service to better equip you with the information you need. Their independent living service works with you to identify the equipment, support, and training that will help you to maintain your independence and live life to the full. There's a health and well-being service that includes emotional support and formal counselling. You can access any of their services by calling their helpline on 01392 876 666. In part two of this magazine, Julian begins with a brief biography of Dick Pym, Devon's fisherman footballer, followed by a short crossword that can be completed without writing the grid down. I have a recipe to accompany some of fruits and cream, and the answers to follow the crossword follow this. Jill then reads a piece about racing gigs. Gillian has a feature on Twin Towns, and I will give us the details of a circular walk. Jill brings this edition to a close with a poem entitled Love Song, 31st of July.
Dick Pym, Devon's fisherman footballer. Devon's fisherman footballer kept goal for Bolton Wanderers in the famous White Horse FA Cup final in 1923, the first football match ever played at Wembley. The game was known as the White Horse Final because of the presence of a mounted white police force at the helm of crowd control, and ended in a 2-0 win for Bolton. Pym had joined them from Exeter City 2 years earlier for a world record £5,000. Pym, nicknamed Pincher Pym, won further FA Cup winner medals with Bolton in 1926 and 1929 and earned 3 England caps. 100 years on, he remains the only goalie to play in 3 finals without conceding a goal. Dick was born into a fishing family and played for his local club in Topsham, initially as a centre-forward, before moving to Exeter City in 1911. There he played his first game in the reserves in December, and on the 23rd of March 1912, he debuted in the first team, replacing the regular goalkeeper. He subsequently appeared in 186 consecutive matches in the Southern League for Exeter. In 1914, under Exeter manager Arthur Chadwick, he toured Argentina and Brazil, playing Brazil in Rio de Janeiro in its historic first official match. During the First World War, Pym joined the Devonshire Regiment in 1916, where he served as physical training instructor. When Exeter City joined the Football League in 1920, Pym was sold to Bolton Wanderers at the end of the 1920-21 season for the enormous sum of £5,000 to enable the club to purchase its home ground, St James's Park. Pym debuted for England on the 28th of February 1925 in a 2-1 over Wales. The following month he played in a 2-0 victory over Scotland. On the 1st of March 1926, again playing Wales, he earned his third and final cap. Pym left Bolton in 1930 after 336 matches for the club, going on to play for another year with non-league Yeovil and Petters United. After this, he returned to his beloved fishing industry. Being brought up in Topsham as a young teenager, he had joined one of the town's 24 fishing crews. From February to August, salmon were caught using a 220-metre-long seine, the nets deployed from rowing boats and hauled in from the riverbank by hand. Outside the salmoning season, the crews went to sea with the outgoing tide and drifted for herring. Dick Pym's grandson, Richard Pym, explained what fishing for salmon was like. The early months of the season were cold, wet, windy, and dangerous. Rowing a heavy wooden boat, pulling ropes with bare hands, and walking in deep, sticky mud, wearing guernseys and oilskins, was physically challenging. Teamwork was essential. These were tough, competitive men who faced life with courage and determination. Dick's core muscles developed, and he became tough and agile. He could catch or punch a heavy leather ball weighing twice as much as a modern football. Dangers at sea made him quick-thinking and unflappable, and he could avoid shoulder-charging forwards who tried to shove him over the goal line with the ball. Fishing was not only a love, but a necessity. Although Dick's £5,000 transfer fee to Bolton made him the most expensive goalkeeper in the world at the time, he only earned £8 a week in the football season and a weekly £6 retainer in the summer. In the early 20th century, he was one of over 100 Topsham fishermen, and on a good day, 50 or more salmon could be caught in one haul. Stocks declined from the late 1980s, and in 2018, the Environment Agency placed a 10-year moratorium on seine knitting, effectively ending a 2,000-year-old industry. Dick was a capped England player and enjoyed fame as a cigarette card pin-up, but he primarily thought of himself as a fisherman. As an old man, looking back on an eventful life, he said, "I could talk about boating and fishing forever." He became the last surviving member of the historic 1923 Bolton Wanderers team and lived until he was 95, earning him the record for the longest living England international footballer.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
And it's crossword time now, and Tina here with the questions for you. We're using a grid of 5x5 squares and just 6 words, 3 across and 3 down. Let's give you the clues to the across words. One across, along the top, after a while. 4 across, that's through the middle, hurtful. 5 across, along the bottom, the liquid from rubber trees. And the down clues now. One down on the left-hand side, nearby area. 2 down through the middle, to have confidence in. And on the right-hand side, 3 down, famous make of watch. The answers will follow a little later.
Meringues, Swiss style. Big is beautiful, and these giant meringues are no exception. I must admit, though, that whatever size you make meringues in, they always look good. This recipe is easy to make. All you need is a bit of thyme. The ingredients. 25 grams of cocoa powder. 400 grams of large free-range or organic egg whites. That's about 10 large egg whites. and 800 grams of caster sugar. For smaller quantities, simply use 2 parts sugar to 1 part egg white. You'll need a pinch of table salt, and to preheat the oven to 110 degrees centigrade or gas mark a quarter, and then line 2 large baking trays with non-stick baking paper or a silicone tray. To start, you place the egg whites, sugar and salt into a medium saucepan. Put on a pair of clean disposable gloves to cover your hands and place the saucepan on a very, very low heat, gently heating the egg whites and melting the sugar while stirring the mixture continuously using one of your gloved hands. This might sound a bit odd, but it's very important. By using your hand, you can control the heat, as you do not want to heat the mixture above 37 degrees, blood temperature, so you can feel that while you're stirring. Stirring it all the time helps to dissolve the sugar too. Once again, with the gloves, you can feel if the sugar is dissolving. Once the temperature has reached 37 degrees, hand hot, remove the pan from the heat. Transfer this egg white mixture to an electric stand mixer fitted with a large balloon whisk and whisk it for 8 minutes. By this time, the mixture becomes very thick and very glossy. Remove the mold from the mixture and sift the cocoa powder over the meringue. Use 2 large metal spoons and scoop deep into the meringue mixture, folding lightly as you go to achieve a ripple effect of cocoa through the meringue. Don't be tempted to mix the cocoa in completely though, as you will spoil your rustic rippled effect. Please don't overmix this. Drop 5 or 6 of these heaped spoonfuls onto each prepared baking tray, leaving a little space between them as the meringues will swell when they cook. And bake in the oven for 2 hours, when the meringues will be firm on the outside, but still slightly gooey in the centre. Remove from the oven and leave the meringues to cool on the baking trays for 10 minutes. Then carefully transfer them to a wire rack and leave them to cool completely. The meringues will keep in an airtight container for up to 3 days.
And here are your crossword answers for this month. 1 across, the clue was after a while, the answer is later. 4 across, through the middle, hurtful provides the word cruel. And 5 across along the bottom, liquid from rubber trees is latex. And now the down answers. 1 down on the left-hand side, nearby area gives us the word local. 2 down through the middle, to have confidence in is trust. And 3 down on the right-hand side, that famous make of watch is Rolex. I hope we did well on those.
DNF Soundings.
Cornish gigs, centuries of history being kept alive today. The Cornish pilot gig has a long and hard-working history. In the early 1800s, there would have been around 200 gigs, sometimes under sail, to be found in use around the Cornish coastline. Gigs were originally built to take the pilot out to the sailing ships, and were used to help larger vessels to navigate a safe passage, to trade with those same ships, and to help rescue those in danger. Stranded in remote or dangerous locations, or jumping from sinking ships. They would have transported goods and people between the Isles of Scilly and the mainland, but also to ferry smuggled contraband ashore. These workhorses of the sea were naturally expected to move fast about their work, and a racing of sorts therefore ensued. The first to get to a ship would reap the various rewards, whether that be the pilotage fee or goods to trade. Nowadays, gigs are of course raced merely for pleasure. The rowing techniques most in favour have come and gone over the years. Clothing has obviously changed radically, and there are now GRP plastic gigs available for training purposes and owned by many clubs. As many women as men row nowadays, and gig clubs are spreading even further out of their historical West Country homeland and can be found along the southwest coast from Portishead to Hayling Island, though clubs exist as far away as Blakeney in Norfolk. This includes the Crab Club, the Cornwall Rowing Association for the Blind. This was established in Newquay in 2003. The Crab Team are a crew of blind rowers who compete in Cornish Pilot gig rowing. Gig racing for the blind was initially started in the Scillies. The Crab Team was formed when a group of blind people who had been introduced to the sport of Cornish Pilot gig rowing went on to form a crew and initially competed in borrowed boats. In 2003, after a successful application for funding and determined fundraising by friends, the Dal Luia was built by renowned boat builder Ralph Bird. Although the sport has seen lots of changes to the boats, many aspects of the gigs remain the same. According to the Cornish Pilot Gig Association, the gigs which we see today are taken from a traditional design and follow the original specifications as laid down by the Peters family in the form of the gig Treffery, 1838, which is still actively rowed by the Newquay Rowing Club. In 1981, Ralph Bird and other enthusiasts borrowed a few historic gigs and set up the Truro Three Rivers Race. Within 5 years, four pilot gig clubs had been established, and this led to the Cornish Pilot Gig Association being formed in 1988 with Ralph as president. Since the 1980s, the sport has grown and grown, with nearly 150 gigs lining up on the start line at the World Pilot Gig Championships, which takes place each year on St Mary's, Isles of Scilly. Gig rowing has clearly developed over the centuries to give new and more enjoyable incentives to get out on the water and appreciate our surroundings. But part of the appeal is there's still traditional build and appearance. Sidmouth Gig Club was founded in the summer of 2009 and throughout the summer months row on Wednesday and Friday evenings as well as Sunday mornings. They will next be racing at the Exmouth Regatta on the 16th of July and the Sidmouth Regatta on the 27th of August.
Twinned towns. Twinning of cities, towns and villages across Europe took off in the aftermath of World War II, when the driving force was a shared history and a desire to forge bonds of friendship, to help each other get going again. The bonds forged have lasted well in most cases. However, these days, the motives for joining a local twinning association are as much about affordable and enriching ways to travel, especially for young families keen to introduce their children to other cultures, languages and friends. Seton has been twinned with Thierry Harcourt in Normandy, France, since 1982. This small rural commune is situated on the River Orne, some 15 miles south of Caen, on the edge of the scenic area of hills known as the Suisse Normande. The town acts as a cultural and administrative centre for many surrounding villages and hamlets. During the Second World War, the town was occupied by German forces. After the Normandy landings, the town was a site of bitter fighting and suffered much damage, with most of the town centre and the chateau being destroyed. The town was finally liberated by the British 59th Division on August 14, 1944. Today, Zuurijärvi is a thriving town and is a popular centre for outdoor activities, notably kayaking. The town regularly hosts the World Kayak Polo Championships. The public area outside the new Tesco development in Seaton was renamed Zuurijärvi Place in 2013 to mark the 30th anniversary of the twinning arrangement. The Sidmouth Twinning Circle arranged a visit from 19 residents of Locle in Switzerland who arrived to visit on June the 18th this year. The visit was delayed for 2 years because of the COVID pandemic, and the circle's members were very much looking forward to welcoming their Swiss friends. Many of the members of the Twinning Circle freely shared their homes and time to act as hosts. There was a programme of events each day and some free time to explore Sidmouth, with a walking guidebook in French that was put together for the last visit in 2017, partially funded by the Keith Owen Fund. The Twinning Circle arranged to take their guests to Abbotsbury Gardens and Swanery on a tour of Powderham Castle and a Stuart Line cruise to Brixham on their last day. One of the visitors, Martin Kasparek, was an accomplished organist and performed on the organ in the parish church of St Giles and St Nicholas during the visit. Many of East Devon's towns and villages are twinned. Honiton, with Mesidon Canon, a small town in Normandy, Axminster with Douvres-la-Dillevande, a small town in Normandy, near the D-Day beaches, and Ottery St Mary with Ilsfeld in Germany.
A circular walk on Eidford Common. When people think of Haldon Hill, the idyllic Eidford Common does not necessarily spring to mind. Its relatively hidden access point hides thousands of years of history, a diverse habitat system full of wildlife, and a chance to escape the crowds. This area of lowland heath was long ago cleared for farming, but due to the land's poor, sandy soil structure, many plants were unable to grow in the harsh conditions. As such, Eidford Common and other heathlands in the UK have suffered severe decline. Now special importance is being placed on remaining areas like this one, ensuring the heathland is protected and still enjoyed. Emperor moths, light jars and lizards can be found living here in and amongst the grasslands and heather, which is broken up by sparse Scots pines that stand tall and are dotted across the heath. This small area of the nature reserve can be discovered in many different ways, but the recommended walk follows a clockwise direction to maximise the views on offer. The directions for the walk. Head onto the common from the car park and follow the wide tree-covered track for approximately 300 metres until you reach a fork. Turn left to make your way across open heathland, starting to descend. As you make your way along this next section, you'll have uninterrupted views across Tamebridge to the south and even to the southern tours of Dartmoor to the west. Take the second right-hand turn and follow this track to a T-junction. Turn right at the T-junction and head northwest along the southern perimeter of the site. A well-placed bench is available for a brief rest and an opportunity to enjoy the view. Continue along this path and enjoy the bright yellow of the gorse and the smell of pine filling your nose as you make your way towards the denser tree cover. Continue on this path for another 500 metres and it will hairpin back on itself in the woodland, taking you steadily uphill for a few hundred metres more. There is abundant wildlife here to hear. The track wiggles left and right before taking you alongside an open area with wooden posts, marking the high point of the common. Simply continue on this path to return to the car parks. Some key points for the walk. The start and finish is at Ideford Common Car Park, Colley Lane, EX70QE, with the grid reference SX903790 and the What Three Words location Sweeten Flexibly Prom. The walk should take about an hour and is about 1¾ miles. It's an easy walk, turning to moderate on the couple of climbs. It's hard-packed heathland footpaths, but there can be some muddy areas after rainfall. And the parking is free in the designated car park.
Love Song, 31st of July by Richard Osmond. Today, the Queen Ant and her lovers took their nuptial flight, scattering upwards like a handful of cracked black peppercorns thrown in the face of a bear. The bear being, in this case, a simile for the population of Lewisham and Hither Green. There is an increasingly common assertion online that the winged of every ant nest in Britain take off on the same bright morning. This says less about ants than it does about the state of media in which we place ourselves. Connected enough to hear and repeat all claims and verify some, yet prone to confirmation bias owing to algorithms which favour new expressions of that which we already hold to be true. Myth moves in step with commerce. When merchant ships arrived once per season from the Orient, they brought silk and saffron and stories of dog-sized ants which mined gold and took to the sky only to defend their treasures from camel-riding thieves. Now we receive the exotic via fibre optics as a stream of high-frequency trades. My love, I can't speak with authority on commodity futures. The wonders of the East and the behaviour of insects in Liverpool and Tunbridge Wells, or any city outside my directly observable reality. But it's flying ant day in my heart, if nowhere else.
Well, that's all for this edition. My thanks go to our readers, Gillian and Jill, to our producer, Hilary, and to our registrar, Wendy Eagles. Thanks also to the Woodbury and One Magazine and Devon Live for the use of their copy. I hope you have a wonderful summer, and we look forward to bringing you another range of news and articles in our September edition. Until then, it's goodbye from all the team.